Good afternoon, everyone.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
I apologize for being late and delaying us by most of the half hour that we're late.
I'll take at least 10 minutes.
And I would like to call to order the Metro System Safety and Operations Committee meeting for April 19th, 2012. Roll call, please.
Director Fasana.
Here.
Director Kanabe.
Here.
Chair Najarian.
Here.
A quorum's present.
Thank you. The first item on the agenda is item 56.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. John Roberts, Executive Director of Transportation, sitting in for Mr. Alejandro, who's in the process of becoming a new grandfather. So
Extend our congratulations.
We're excited to learn all the specifics when it gets done. It's always my pleasure to introduce to recognize our employees of the month. And today we have two very special employees. First, I'd like to ask Mr. Pat Orr, Superintendent of Maintenance, to introduce Mr. Morales, the Maintenance Employee of the Month from Division 18.
Good afternoon. This is Alex Morales. Alex is a master mechanic, works at Division 18 in South Bay. He's married, has three children, a son and two daughters, and he's fully engaged with the kids.
Thank you.
Good job.
I just appreciate the recognition that this Metro gives me.
Okay.
Hey. Next, if I can introduce.
So let me wait. We're not that easy. So, what's your favorite procedure on our vehicles? What are you best at? Overhauling, electrical troubleshooting.
We're doing the repeater. We're mostly doing repeaters on the. Repeaters, roll calls are not the ones that are failing. We just try to pick up after. We try to clean the act, you know.
So the bad repairs come to you to be fixed properly.
Making sure it's fixed properly. Yeah.
Very good. Thank you. That's very important to the agency.
A master mechanic, which means he does everything.
Excellent.
Yes.
Great. Next, I'd like to introduce Mike Greenwood, Operations Manager of Transportation, Division 9, and he'll be introducing Mr. Cabrera.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. It's my pleasure to introduce a 31-and-a-half-year driving veteran, Encarnacion Cabrera. Wow. He's truly one of Metro's best of the best operators. Some of his career highlights include the fact that he's never had a major rule violation in more than 31 years of operating a bus. He's also only had two avoidable accidents in more than 31 years, and he's one of Metro's best for on-time performance. In fact, in the entire calendar year of 2011, Operator Cabrera's on-time performance was more than 96% on time while driving the 76 line, which is one of Division 9's toughest lines to keep on schedule. It's the line that operates on Valley Boulevard between downtown Los Angeles and El Monte Station. Operator Cabrera lives in San Dimas with his wife. He also has a son and grandson who reside in Texas. Operator Cabrera.
Operator, I just want to make a brief comment. I feel a great deal of kinship with you. Your one accident in 31 years. I myself, as an operator, did not have an accident for about 6 weeks. So I feel brotherhood there. So thank you very much for your accomplishments.
Thank you very much. Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and I do appreciate this award. I want to thank my division manager and assistant manager and the board as well. Thank you very much.
Mr. Leahy, you want to come down for a picture?
Yes.
Board members, if...
Thank you for inviting us to partake in the picture.
Alejandro. I wanted these guys all by myself.
Art, why don't you come over here?
There you go. That's good. Thank you.
you. Battery.
Congratulations.
These chairs are terrible.
When the items come up. You know, like we always do.
We have one more special recognition. We have an rail transportation operations supervisor of the 1.4, almost 1.5 million passengers today. He observed a situation where there were some missing kids reported on TV, happened to see them, and took action. The police were called. LASD responded immediately. And I'd like to introduce Mr. Baca. Robert Castanon is his manager from Rail Division.
Mr. Chair, it is with great pleasure I'd like to take these few minutes to recognize one of our rail transit operators, supervisor, Mr. Edward Baca, a 22-year employee. While performing his normal duties, rail transit operations supervisor Edward Baca was getting off a northbound GO Line train at the Memorial Park station. While walking up to the street level, he recognized two older children pass him down the stairwell onto the adjacent platform. Mr. Baca recognized the two juveniles from watching an earlier TV newscast about the two missing children from the Pasadena area. There, the two juveniles boarded the next approaching train. Mr. Baca immediately called into the Metro Rail Operations Control Center and requested LAD assistance to have the train held at the GO Line Del Mar station. LASD dispatched a unit to meet him there where he identified the two missing children. Pasadena Police Department was also notified and responded. The deputies removed the two juveniles from the train and took them to the Pasadena, to their Pasadena Police Department to take them back to wherever they needed to go. Mr. Bach is commended for his exceptional observation skills and quick actions. Thank you.
Wow, that's great.
That concludes
have any
our
words, Mr. Baca, to tell us how you did that? You just saw him?
I saw him earlier in a news segment on Channel 2, and then I was at Memorial Station. I observed them and notified the authorities.
Missing juveniles.
Thank you.
Okay, pay attention.
Okay, thank you.
Nope, this is it. I apologize for that.
Very much.
This is our service reliability for February. Our bus, on the bus side, although our goal is 85%, our actual was 75%. We continue to make improvements over last year. We continue to focus in on the areas that will get this to 85%. So, historically, we were down in the 60%, and we're very excited about the progress we'll be making. The rail side, the goal is 99%.
Sorry, but we're still short.
We're still short.
And but we have improved. Is that what you're saying?
We've improved.
60s before, but now we're up.
We've improved through the last several years. This is a chart going back to 2009 when we were at the 65% range. We have hit as high as 78%. We have more progress to make. We're doing some focusing in on specific lines now. We're continuing to work with operators that are running hot. At one time, it was common for operators maybe 15% of the time. Most recently, we're in the 2% range. There's still some, it should be zero. And that's our focus with our follow-up, our supervisory staff. We're taking appropriate either education or disciplinary action to make those corrections. So we're going to stay with the goal of 85 and continue to make progress in that area.
Mr. Chair, let me put it another way. I've seen months when I first came here where we were in the 50s, high 50s. In the 8 years, this is my view is parochial of necessity. In the 8 years before I arrived here, we had four times when we had 2 months in a row when we were higher than 70% on time. We had four times, 2 months in a row, never 3 months in a row. We are now about 30 months in a row, higher than 70%, and some months approaching 80. I don't know that we'll get to 85, but we need to keep pressing on this issue. I think we've reduced HOT from 15 to 20 down to 1 or 2%. Still not good enough, but we're going the right direction.
So HOT you can correct. You can say your HOT slow down.
Well,
how do you correct being late?
Well, I mean, it depends what the cause of the problem is. It might be that the operator's leader is running HOT and leaving more passengers behind. It might be that the operator's not paying attention. It might, you know, there's any number of explanations for what's going on. But what it requires is that the field personnel and the radio personnel be paying attention to what's going on with the system. And I'm afraid that hasn't been the case all the time.
And it's done by radio? So the
radio
dispatch
and
will...
Radio and field.
And field. So a double...
Mm-hmm. Double. Yeah, and there's typically a contact made with the operator, what's going on. What we have found is that we've made tremendous improvement in this area, but we still have more progress to make. The next one, as far as boardings, our boardings, historically, November, December is usually our lowest month, and for February 2012, we're trending back up as far as overall boardings. We expect March to continue in the upward direction. Customer satisfaction is one that we continuously need to work on. Our goal is 2.20 per 100,000 boardings. Our actual for February was 3.12. On the right-hand side, we have a breakdown pie chart to show the various areas that we need to be focusing on. Gives a general percent level. So we continue to work with customer complaints, working with operators who have repeat customer complaint problems, follow-up investigations. We work closely with customers. Some are anonymous. Some are very helpful in helping us to focus in on corrective actions that we can take. Our system-wide bus cleanliness, our goal is an 8.0 out of a 10-point scale. We're actually at 8.3. We continue to focus on our bus cleanliness. Some of the things that we have done recently is reallocate supervisors to focus on this task. We've also had a very aggressive push to ensure that we have a full complement of budgeted positions of service attendants who actually do the cleaning. So 8.3 is where we are. We continue to look forward. We have some divisions that are at 9.0 or higher. So we continue to work for a 10. The perfect 10 would be as a new bus would be. So we look forward to seeing that 10 at some point. Operations staffing, as I said just previously, we've made an aggressive move to ensure that if we're whatever budgeted number that we're budgeted, that we staff to that. For the maintenance, we are at a staffing level that we probably have not seen in my years and years of being here. As far as mechanics and service attendants and all of our support personnel. We also have been aggressively hiring our operators. We set what we call an operator assignment ratio of a 1.20. We are hitting that in April, and our goal is to continue to be there from now on. We've had periods of time, if you recall, we may have been down to maybe 1.15 or 1.16. So this helps us with ensuring that we don't fatigue our operators, that we provide the proper service on a consistent basis. Rail side is fully staffed currently. Our operators for the Expo line are all in place, trained, and currently in pre-revenue service, getting ready for the opening day, April 28th. We continue to work with our midlife program. There's a picture on the right-hand side of an older white bus with a yellow stripe, and then the new pink color with the poppy and the silver bottom. And primarily the Midlife Project is an opportunity to bring the bus in, bring it back to a like new condition, and ensure that work on increased reliability for the long run. Engines are changed out, understructures are worked on, transmissions, power packages, interior seats, windows, and a complete paint job. Rail car, we continue to work with the Red Line Car Body Enhancement Program, mitigating the interior graffiti, floor replacement and repair, to continue to ensure that our rail cars are kept to the highest level. New programs, we recently started a rail station cleanliness program. Our goal is to, we have 108 stations that will be inspected every 6 months. We have some pictures, if you'll notice on the right, this is a before and after of an elevator, case. As you can see at the bottom, at the base of the elevator, a lot of corrosion, from, different sources. And, we're going through and refurbishing them and painting them. And our goal is continue to push, station, appearance. On the left-hand side, we've been doing some additional work, on the before and after, you can see a yellow line that delineates, the separation from where we don't want people standing. And we hope this will help us with our, improve our safety so it's more easily to distinguish, where our passengers aren't to be, standing. This is a plastic material that has a long life durability to it. So we hope to see, just improve our safety and just the appearance. That completes my report. Any questions I can answer?
Any questions from the committee?
Thank you.
I did have a card that we may have glossed over on item 56. Okay, well, let's stick with 57 then. Worth Baker, followed by John Walsh.
This is something new.
A couple things. I guess maybe with the paint, with the painting things, it would be great in the subway stations if you guys could paint, like, no waiting areas as far as, like, when people try to get off the trains, people are waiting right there. It's kind of like a rugby match. It should not be – it's kind of like a V-shape should be painted where you cannot board the train and get in this area until everyone's left the train. It's just retarded. That, I mean, this human behavior is just really bad, and it should be really painted in that you're not supposed to wait in that area. I think plastic seats other than over fabric seats would be better. And a good way to keep the buses clean is to keep the dirty people off the buses. I guess I'm curious, like, what about the complaints, like, what I wonder what avenue people complain through. Is it like a simple? It's not like I don't see a lot of signage like how to complain. And then as far as like on time service goes, it'd be kind of cool if the bus drivers had a graphical interface showing them what speed they need to be going at to maintain their schedule.
Thank you, John Walsh.
John Walsh, blogging at HollywoodHighlands.org. Anyone watching us in the lunchroom? Hi. HollywoodHighlands.org. You keep the worst part, you solve things by not mentioning the worst aspect of travel, the escalators. They have never improved. You spent hundreds of millions of dollars on the escalators, and the firm that got the escalator was Burke's firm, Mr. Burke, Von Burke's husband. Ridership, look at your numbers. It's going down as the gas of price is going up. That's counterintuitive. We all know. Oh, listen, people go to rail when they're too expensive to buy gas. It is going down. And I want to say thank God for Dick Clark. Because of him, Antonio didn't get on television last night with Proposition F.
Proposition F.
Thank you. I do remember from some of our previous reports we had some escalator issues. Can you address those? Are those being properly maintained? Are there any chronic issues that are plaguing the stations?
We did issue a new contract, but we've also taken some steps to, throughout the day, we have light-duty personnel that have been assigned. We've also been working very closely with our Rail Operation Control Center to respond in a quicker manner. We have improved greatly on the numbers of lifts or escalators are down at any one time. I saw a report yesterday that it's around 1%. We have, I believe, around 200 escalators, so we've made some great improvements on that.
Okay, thank you.
I ride the system every day, and now and again you'll see an elevator or escalator, pardon me, being worked on during the day, which I don't like. They should work on them at night. Sometimes you see one, not every day, but now and again you'll see one that's not running. Probably some children or kids will push the button at the base of the escalator. I can't say I ride every day. I don't think I detect any kind of a pattern of frequent out-of-service condition on the escalators.
Is it safe to say that if an escalator is out of service, that it's immediately observed and noticed?
We have a variety.
Obviously, you can't repair it immediately, but
we have a variety of systems. But the one thing, as our people that we have assigned to monitor, they're trained. They have a key on how to restart. Many of them, a sensor has just shut it down. In some cases, a rarity, there it may be more to it. Rail Operation Control Center makes a call to the contractor, and they respond.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Do you want to address our ridership? I mean, is that?
When we come back in the budget, I'd be happy to give a comprehensive report on ridership.
Okay.
I know we've seen some trends going down, but we see some now going up. I just saw one yesterday. Rail is up. And so, you know, when we get back to the budget, we'll talk about that. I do know that that amongst the biggest systems in the country, we have the lowest fares and the lowest average loads because of our load standard policy. Our ridership has been flat. We've lost a lot of jobs in Los Angeles, but I think that we're on the rebound.
It's in Cuba.
Who was?
Art.
All right. Thank you very much. Let's move. That is a receive report. Thank you for your report. Item 58. Is there a report on that?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Item 58.
Yes, item 58. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Vijay Kamani, Executive Officer of Corporate Safety, and item 58 is our monthly presentation to you on system safety. I want to start with this slide. I want to explain some of the issues that were raised at our monthly meeting, monthly board meeting last month on some of the slides, so I will address some of those comments that we received. This slide shows our bus accidents per 100,000 hub miles. It shows it by month and by year. One of the questions was, how do we establish the goal of 3.10, which is the current fiscal year goal? And the goal was established by looking at our prior trends, our accident trends, our collision trends over the prior 4 or 5 years. And then we always try to establish a more challenging goal that was set in the previous year. So the previous year was 3.14. The one before that was 3.28, and so on and so forth. So every year we try to lower the goal to try to challenge ourselves to achieve it. The other question that was asked was, what if we were to set a unrealistically lower goal? What would the economic trade-off be with doing that? I think while we could certainly establish any number we like, it's a chosen goal that it's done internally. I think we have to be very careful about setting a goal that is not achievable or too aggressive. It could impact, for example, our schedules, our service that we offer to the public. We could relax our schedules, but then again, the level of service would degrade. So I think that the challenge is to set a goal that has a balance between both service and safety. Now, we know there are certain collisions that are uncontrollable, while others are controllable. And what we're trying to do is focus on the collisions that are controllable by our operators. Now, this graph, these two graphs, it represents all collisions that occur at the agency. And I'm going to show you a slide later on in my presentation that compares our performance with other agencies, some of our peer agencies. That was another question that was asked at the last board meeting, and we have that for you today. While this shows all collisions, the one that I will show later that does a comparison, it shows just the there are certain thresholds. It shows what they call National Transit Database reported collisions, and that has a particular threshold that all agencies in the country have to report into the FTA, and that is a more meaningful comparison than doing a comparison on this chart. This is the same chart that shows it for the rail mode. It shows our bus rail collisions by month and by fiscal year. This is the total rail. This is system-wide on rail. And this slide shows it broken down by light rail and heavy rail. As we can see, the heavy rail goal, we're doing extremely well. Again, that's our red line primarily, red and purple line. And the light rail line primarily is challenged by the blue line. We don't have as many accidents on the gold line or the green line as we do on the blue line. But as you can see, we're still, as of February, we still have a goal of 0.8, and we are now at 0.72. This is the chart that I mentioned earlier. This shows the comparison between us and the other transit agencies. This is National Transit Database for bus collisions per 100,000 hub miles. And it shows it over the last four and a half years. As you can see in this chart, we're trending favorably as compared to some of the other agencies. We're not as bad as some of the other agencies are performing. Keeping in mind that some of the agencies are much smaller, for example, Sacramento, Dallas, they don't operate as many buses through intersections. We have more intersections that our buses operate through. So obviously there is some apples to oranges comparison, but we're comparing them on a per 100,000 hub mile basis. So that's the normalized factor. This shows the same chart for the rail mode, for light rail and heavy rail. Again, on the heavy rail side, we're doing a lot better compared to light rail. But again, if you look at the light rail chart up on top, compared to some of the other agencies that operate light rail lines, we're not doing too bad in comparison. Again, a factor that affects that rate is the number of grade crossings that we have. For example, in the blue line alone, we have over 100 grade crossings. And the more crossings you have, the more probability of collisions. So that plays into this. This next slide shows our leading factors, such as system safety incidents that occur.
Is that what this chart shows? Los Angeles is the light blue bar to the left of each of the clusters, which are grouped by year by system. So we see in 7, Los Angeles had the lowest frequency rate. In 8, the lowest. 9, a little higher, but still second to lowest.
Right.
10, a little bit, about the same as 9, but still higher than most of them. And then in 11, the same sort of thing. So what we see here is a persistent trend over a period of years where L.A. is near the lower half of the frequency amongst the bus systems.
That is correct.
Amongst other big cities, right?
That is correct.
Based on the frequency increase, though, does that suggest either an increase or a reporting issue?
7 is awfully low. I don't know. That's a good question. I think that we should look at it. We're kind of constant the last 3 years. So I think we should probably give that some thought. I don't know.
There was some concern the last time we showed this chart about system the system safety incidents that occur, primarily the red signal run-throughs on the main line. And as we can see, this fiscal year in FY12, That is leading the number of incidents that continue to occur. We're working with operations to try to control that, and as I mentioned in my previous presentation, these are mostly occurring in what we call street running areas where there is no automatic train protection. But the good news is for the month of February, we didn't have any. This shows it broken down by month for the current fiscal year on the top graph. The lower graph is a presentation on our corrective action plans, the status of our corrective action plans. Primarily, those are done via the three existing means. There's an internal safety review that is conducted by the Corporate Safety Department. There is a triennial review that is an independent body, the PUC, that comes out and does that every 3 years. And then the inspections, which the PUC conducts pretty much on a quarterly basis, about 3 to 4 times a year of our infrastructure. And the open corrective actions, we're working on closing those. They're mostly, again, administrative type open corrective actions, and our plan is to get them closed by the end of this fiscal year.
Is that an unusual amount of PUC inspections?
It really is, compared to, because we are so large compared to some of the other California agencies, for example, Sacramento or San Diego, or BART, and we operate different modes, they come out here more often to inspect us. And they do track inspections, they do signal inspections, they'll do the vehicle inspections, and that's what that represents.
Is that all unannounced, or are they owner, like Metro generated, or are they generated by private citizens? Or?
No, this is generated by the PUC staff. They generally contact us, and they, for example, they might say they want to come out next week to do an inspection of the blue line tracks or the red line signaling system or the gold line vehicles. And then our staff...
So them are announced?
Yes, they're announced.
Oh, they're coming.
We know they're coming, but we don't know where they're going to go. Okay. So, for example, on a 22-mile railroad, they don't tell us we want to look at this section of the track.
Okay.
Right. This presents the results of our Mystery Rider program. We seem to be doing extremely well last month on both wearing seat belts and standing behind the line before the bus is moved. And the bottom graph shows a decreasing trend for cell phone use and running red lights. Now, there was a question that was asked at the last board meeting, and that was, is there a correlation between the two graphs? And we've looked into that, and there is no correlation. They're independent. So, for example, we don't see many operators who are on the cell phone and running the red light at the same time. They're independent. So the graph that shows running red lights is just running red lights. The graph that shows cell phone use is just cell phone use. And finally, this graph shows our efforts on outreach and education. This is a very critical component that we continue to focus on to explain both bus and rail safety to the community. Through presentations and tours, and this represents a number of people that we reached that we have reached in the last this fiscal year. And that concludes my presentation. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the committee? I do have two speakers, Worth Baker, John Walsh.
Yeah, as far as like the accident rates and how many accidents per month and per mile, I mean, it's interesting, but I think a more important measure would be actually a dollar metric. I mean, 10 buses knocking off a mirror off a car or like one fatal accident, I mean, you know, it's like 10 versus 1, but that one is probably a much bigger dollar amount. So that'd be much more interesting to me to see a dollar metric on the cost of the accidents.
John Walsh, blogging on HollywoodHighlands.org. I took my first bus. It was called MTA then in 1966. Then it became SCRTD. Then it became MTA again. The problem is not on the buses. Once I got a card. In other words, if it's an accident, they give you a card on the bus. It was a minor accident. All the years, I don't know anybody else. And I want to say that at least 5 or 6 times a year, the driver performs a magnificent maneuver preventing a horrible accident by some jerk. That happens at least 6 times when I'm taking. So I'm telling you, I was saying my prayers and the driver got, and I'm an atheist and I was saying my prayers. The problem is the blue line, Satan's line. It was built wrong. And it is the deadliest line in America. Thank you, LACTC and Mayor Bradley, his true legacy.
Thank you. I have no other cards. Is there a motion to receive this? Moved. Seconded. Thank you.
Thank you
for your report. I understand that due to the approaching 1:30 deadline, we may be losing one or more of the committee members. So I'd like to move to the action items first and give priority to those. Let's move to item 62 then. And then after 62, we'll do 63, and then 65, and then 64. So 62, 63, 65, 64.
Good afternoon. Conan Chung, DEO of Service Development. In the interest of time, I'll try to be brief on the presentation. Basically, a little bit of background. This is the Silver Line. What we did about 2 years ago is consolidated four different lines into a bus rapid transit operating on the 110 freeway and the 10 freeway from the Harbor Gateway Transit Center all the way to the El Monte Station. It's resulted in shorter local feeder routes, which provide better on-time performance on those routes, and we're also able to reduce some of our annual revenue hours by taking out duplication in downtown L.A. At the same time, Foothill Transit also operates the Silver Streak, and there's a portion of the Silver Streak and the Silver Line that duplicate each other from the El Monte Station into downtown L.A., as depicted on the map on top, as well as the Silver Line illustration below. We've seen a consistent ridership growth on the Silver Line over the last 2 years. We saw a 70% increase, and some of our buses, especially during the peak hours coming out of El Monte Station, are running at capacity. So this is an idea that basically looks at really coordinating and consolidating the two different lines, the Silver Line and Foothill Transit Silver Streak, and combining the services into a silver corridor, so to speak. The concept is that Metro will honor Foothill Transit Silver Streak fare media on the Silver Line, and Foothill Transit will honor Metro's Silver Line fare media on the Silver Streak. So what you have there is really an open system where people can come up, irrespective of having a Metro Pass or a Foothill Transit Pass, you can get on the first bus that comes through. When we share the corridor's bus capacity, it results in more efficient regional transit system and also more productive services for both agencies. Another benefit is that there's actually more access to key destinations in downtown because the Silver Line and the Silver Streak have slightly different alignments in downtown, so it gives people more travel options at no additional cost. And then we also simplify the fare payment for passengers because they don't need to account for a Silver Line fare payment structure and then a Silver Streak fare payment structure. This is a map that shows the downtown alignment and the slightly different alignment that provides more options. The terms of this demonstration project would be basically we would run it for about a year from August 2012 to August 2013. It would be tied with the opening of the El Monte Station as part of the Express Lanes project. Only TAP passengers are eligible because we need to be able to count the passengers that are either Foothill passengers on the Metro Silver Line or vice versa. Any existing upcharges to base passes would apply, so we're not changing the fare structure for either Metro or Foothill Transit. The TAP data, again, will be reviewed. It'll be looked at on a quarterly basis to determine the net ridership and revenue impact. What we've talked about from a staff level is that we anticipate some movement from Foothill Transit riders going on to Metro and vice versa. The net ridership impact is to be seen as we go through the demonstration project, but we want to limit the liability in terms of revenue loss. We've capped it at $250,000. I honestly don't think we'll hit that cap, nor does Foothill Transit. So again, we'll go through the program and see where we are as we go through the quarters. And then finally, an evaluation of the demonstration program will be completed no later than 6 months after the conclusion of the demonstration period. We looked at this from a Title VI and environmental justice perspective, and essentially the bottom line is that the Foothill Transit service area actually has a higher percentage of minority population. The other issue is that the Silver Line itself is deemed as a minority line, so therefore we're benefiting Silver Line passengers by allowing them to get onto the Silver Streak for no additional cost. We're also benefiting a higher minority area in terms of being able to serve more of the Foothill Transit service area with both lines. So therefore, given the improvement in service for a minority line and benefiting an area with a greater minority population than Metro, there are no issues related to Title VI and environmental justice. And finally, just next steps. It's contingent on Federal Transit's board approval. We'll draft and execute an interagency agreement to the effects of what I presented. We need to go and program the TAP fare boxes, TAP and fare boxes for both systems to allow them to honor each other's passes. We'll coordinate the schedules as much as possible for Silver Streak and Silver Line, and make sure that the bus bays are consolidated at the new El Monte Transit Center so that people can truly get on the first bus that comes through. And then we'll go into a joint marketing and promotion of the program. And that concludes my presentation.
Okay, thank you. Any comments?
I'll move approval of the item.
Second. Okay, I do have one speaker, Worth Baker.
I'm just curious, so if I have a TAP pass, a monthly TAP pass, do I have to pay an upgrade charge to use the Silver Line?
Yeah, it depends on the monthly pass that you have. We have a zone-up charge, essentially, for a base pass. Mm-hmm. You have to pay the two-zone-up charge. If you have a monthly pass that has the two zones, then you can board for that.
Okay. And so currently, if someone rides the subway system and they buy a paper ticket and they buy the, I guess, the Muni option, it's like another, what was it, 25, 40 cents, 50 cents, whatever, well, does that currently work on the Silver Streak? Do you know offhand?
Again, the upcharges would apply if it's
okay.
A base.
Yeah, and then so and you guys aren't going to do an evaluation of it until during the program. You're going to wait up until 6 months after it's over to do the analysis.
Specific questions. I want to limit you to 1 minute, but I invite you to speak with Conan off mic, and you'll have more than a minute to discuss it with him and get those answers. Thank you. I have a motion and a second, and if there are no objections, this item will be approved unanimously. Thank you. Item 63.
Good afternoon, Chair, board members. I'm Elizabeth Carter, Transportation Contract Services Manager. This board report, staff is recommending board approval to extend the transit service agreement between Metro and the City of Glendale for their B-Line Route 3 from JPL to downtown Glendale, and the transit service agreement between Metro and the City of Los Angeles for Lines 422-601-602 for an additional five-year period. And we're also requesting that the board authorize the chief executive officer or his designee to negotiate and execute all agreements between the City of Glendale and the City of Los Angeles. Currently, ridership on these lines for City of Glendale in FY11, the number of passenger boardings were 725,000. When we had that line here, line 177, we were up carrying about 117,000 passengers. On line 422 in FY11, our passenger boardings were 282,000. 601, we carried 3.8 million passengers on that line, and line 602, we had 998,000. If you have any questions.
The ridership is up dramatically.
Yes, it is.
We're talking about the City of Glendale, Mr. Walsh.
Well, why is it different from
Okay. Thank you for your report. I do have three requests to speak. Worth Baker, John Walsh, Kimberly Richards, in that order. Thank you. Mr. Walsh? I'm deducting 5 seconds from your time for your early comments.
Well, I'll pick the 5 seconds before. You're real tough. Wait a second. We hear double logic. I love this logic. You know, you turn a communist into a libertarian here, okay? That's how the B-line is up. Way up. Thank you. Great. But the MTA ridership is flat. Why? Because the economy. Wait a second. Where is Glendale? In Korea? No, no. The reason your ridership is flat is because the dream of the bus rider is not better bus service. It's a car. The reason your ridership is flat is because you cut out, in the last 7 years, 1 million hours of bus service. That's why they're up and you're down. So take the extra three, take all five, and you know where to put them. You know where to put those 5 seconds.
Time up. Kimberly Richards.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, directors. Kimberly Richards, Chair of the Metro San Fernando Valley Service Council. Two of the lines in this operation agreement fall within Metro San Fernando Valley service area, so I'm a bit disappointed that we were not advised of this and allowed a chance to discuss as a council and bring input forward. Nevertheless, I'm going to go back into the history books, and I'm going to make a suggestion. During the ill-fated Metro Connections service change programs, a concept was floated. I brought maps for you to look at, of the original concept maps, which would have called for Line 422 to make an off-freeway stop at Universal City Station, the logic being that some passengers would have a lower travel time if they were to be able to take the red line to connect to the 422 rather than go up to the 101 freeway. LADOT put thumbs down, so we never formally considered it for implementation. However, I would say that this board has the authority to make that minor change a condition of continued funding.
Thank you. What's the committee's pleasure? I would recommend a
motion. I'll move the item.
Second by Mr. Kanabe,
oh,
if I may be so bold.
For anything for glad.
Thank you. With no objections, 63 is passed. 62, 63, 65, the next action item.
I am recommending board approval of $56,962,500 and Proposition C discretionary funding to continue to provide the mandated paratransit service as well as the free fare and travel training programs, which are above and beyond the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990. The reason we brought this item to the board is it's an increase in Prop C funding of almost 14% from the current fiscal year, which was $50 million. The reasons for this increase are due to other social service agencies cutting back their local dial rides, the state cutting funding to the independent and regional living centers, transportation funds, increased fuel costs. We have an increase in the number of eligible riders, as well as the number of trips that we are providing on this service. I do have a PowerPoint presentation that I just want to go through real quick. The mandated services that Access Services is providing is next day curb-to-curb service on behalf of 45 member agencies. Metro is one of them. The free fare and travel training programs are considered premium services above and beyond ADA. Although they are considered premium services, they are utilized to mitigate the increased in our paratransit costs and demand by encouraging riders to utilize fixed route services for some of their trips. These are their Access Services actual budget from FY 2006 to 2011, and we have it broken out by operating expenses and capital. In 2011, their actual budget is $105 million, which included some carryover funds. In FY 12, their budget is currently $107 million. $50 million of that is the Prop C funding. The next slide shows actual total passenger trips versus eligible riders, and you can see that the number of trips taken and the average eligible riders continues to increase as these social service agencies continue to decrease their services provided. In 2011, we averaged 101,000 eligible riders, and those riders took 2.2 million trips. their funding sources and expenses by program. The majority of their funding comes from federal transit dollars, which is 5310, and then 39.35% of their funding is the Prop C funding that we're requesting here. They do get some interest and 5.26% from passenger fares. The expenses by program, if you see, the majority of the funding is expended on paratransit operations, followed by the eligibility determination of individuals to see if they qualify for the program, administrative cost, and they are also the designated Consolidated Transportation Service Agency for LA County. Their costs for access services paratransit is driven by multiple factors, you know, fuel, aging population, wages paid to staff, operators, demand, any regulations, technical, new software programs to assist, rent, and then any unknown factors. Paratransit demand projections conducted by Access Services vendor HDR projected from 2012 to 2015 are going to increase by 3.12% over the next 4 years, up to, with 2015, 3.49 million trips being provided. And if other local dial rides continue to decrease their service, this number will definitely be impacted. Some of the efforts that Access Services is taking to mitigate costs is we continue to work with the Transit Coalition to oppose the new ADA reasonable accommodation rule, which will go into effect August 31st, 2012. Look at potentially increasing fares. We have purchased, they are in the process of purchasing alternative fuel vehicles. They're the compressed natural gas, MBs. Limit free fare partner reimbursement agreement just to reimburse them for access riders and not their personal care attendants. Review the free fare partner agreements to improve accountability. Possibly seeking reimbursement for Medicaid-eligible trips and coordinating with local dial-a-rides to use their excess capacity for paratransit trips within their service area. And then free fare, continue the free fare program with Metrolink and the free fare partners. This year, in FY 2011, the free fare program 2.5 million trips were taken on our free fare program partners' services, and it saved the county as a whole $90 million. That's $90 million that we saved by having them to take those trips on fixed route services. And that concludes my presentation.
So essentially, this is a request to increase the budgeted amount. I don't see any alternative at this point, but what can we do to, I mean, throughout the agency, we're looking to contain costs and make sure that we're running as efficiently as possible. What alternatives do we have, Mr. Leahy?
Well, we can always do a thorough review of the entire organization's budget. We can look at the standards against which they perform, test that for compliance with the federal requirements, look at whether we're short or whether we exceed the federal requirements, and report back to the board on that, much as has been done recently with other organizations.
I mean, we don't want to exceed. I mean, optimally, we're right at exactly complying with the federal requirements.
We must comply.
Or less.
Well, if we exceed them, it would come down to whether what the cost of such a thing might be and what the trade-offs might be. As we just referenced, if we displace riders and put them on other services, that could have other cost consequences. So you want to kind of very carefully look at what unintended consequences might occur if we change the system. But still, it's appropriate to review management systems periodically just to test.
That sounds reasonable. Mr. Fasana.
Just that there is report information in terms of reasons for the changes, and I guess I'm trying to figure out how many of those percentages. I mean, 14% is a huge increase. And at this point, I agree we should approve it, but at the same time, I think knowing what factors are driving it and getting a sense of which of those we can influence, which we do want to influence or not, whether lengths of trip, other issues in terms of other providers, what our options might be, I think could be helpful, knowing that with what we have today, you know, I certainly support raising the budget, but we need to have some answers.
This is going to be a long-term issue for the agency because we have a rapidly aging population, and which has had not any effect on me as my hair is still brown. But we have an aging population, and yet we're compelled to provide these services to the people who need them. But having said all that, we'd be happy to go back and do the evaluation that we've been referencing.
Okay, thank you. Is there a motion for 65?
Second.
Okay. Oh, there is. I'm sorry. Worth Baker.
Yeah, I just want to comment on trying to shift people to the fixed routes. I feel very much for people who are disabled, and I think they should have service and probably even better service. I think you need to recognize the cost you're putting on the non-disabled public when, for example, a wheelchair comes on the bus, and let's say it delays it 2 minutes. If there were 60 people on that bus delayed 2 minutes, it's 2 hours, and that's a real money, you know, value to that. It's much more efficient for society and for the disabled person to have Access Transit come pick them up and give them door-to-door service than to delay, you know, 60 people for 2 minutes. I think everyone is better off actually shifting to more door-to-door service. And to have to reserve a ride the day before is ridiculous. I would assume or hope that you guys are building an app or a mobile web application, a mobile site. It's just in this day and age, it's just ridiculous if you don't have that.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. With no objections, this item is passed. Let's go to 64, and then we're going to go back to 61 and hear from the CAC. So right now,
okay.
Since you're up there, we'll continue with
okay.
Access.
This is a receive and file report to inform the board members of Access Services proposed changes to its free fare program, which they will be presenting to their board of directors on Monday, March 23rd. The proposal is to reimburse free fare partner agencies that are currently getting reimbursed under their agreements with Access Services for only the Access Service rider trip taken and not their personal care attendance. Currently, Access Services does not reimburse for personal care attendance, but felt the need to develop a policy to state that they would not reimburse for personal care attendance as a result of several of the free fare partner agencies requesting reimbursement under the program. What we will currently in the board report, they had 16 of 23 free fare agencies requesting reimbursement. The city of Glendale just recently had their agreement approved, so we have 17 agencies getting reimbursed for trips taken by Access Service riders on their systems. What it will require us to do based upon if Access Services board does approve the Access's staff's recommendation to not reimburse for personal care attendance, we will have to bring this item back to the board with staff's recommendation. One of the recommendations could be that we charge the personal care attendant the regular rate of $1.50, or we could choose to charge the personal care attendant a reduced rate consistent with our fare policy right now, or continue to allow them to ride for free on our system. And each of the member agencies will have to go back to their respective boards or councils to develop the plan on how they're going to handle the PCAs once Access Board has taken their action.
Well, assuming, as an example, so they don't vote to support that, so what is your staff recommendation going to be? Do you have your backup recommendation yet?
We are going to be taking a look at that with the Office of Civil Rights to make sure that there are no Title VI issues. So perfect. Once we work with them, then we'll bring that recommendation to the board.
Okay, that was going to be my follow-up question. I mean, regardless of what your backup position, are you doing the Title VI search?
Yes, and all that? We are looking at that immediately.
Thank you.
Okay. So that's just the receive and file?
Correct.
Thank you. With no objection, we'll receive that then.
Thank you.
61.
You have requests.
Oh, I'm sorry. Worth Baker. Pass on. Okay. You excused, Director. Thank you for as long as you did. 61 is the Citizens Advisory Council.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Neil Bjornson, Chair of the Citizens Advisory Council. And this is our quarterly report. The CAC, first of all, wishes to thank staff for their professionalism and courtesy regarding a recent Expo Line tour that we took. And we have special thanks that need to go to Bruce Sherburn, Barbara Burns, and others for that. They did a fine job. Okay. As a follow-up to our last quarterly report, our presentation was cut short with the promise of subsequent meetings relating to our subjects of concern. To date, these meetings have not occurred, possibly due to a recent change in staffing. It is desired that our concerns will be addressed in the near future. CAC continues to have major concerns relating to pedestrian crossings along the east side of Flower Street between Adams and Jefferson Boulevards, which have limited sight distance for both northbound Expo trains and pedestrians and cyclists. CAC is of the opinion that pedestrian gates, as installed, are not adequate enough to prevent incidents involving trains and pedestrians. CAC suggests the immediate installation of illuminated warning devices in addition to provide a more direct visual signal to pedestrians and cyclists. The CAC is also concerned that under the accelerated 3010 or America Fast Forward program, transit projects that were originally scheduled to be completed at or about 2030 would be revised to open at least 10 years earlier. Therefore, there could be a shortfall of funds to operate these accelerated projects due to the difference in opening dates, which must be addressed and accounted for. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Taylor, you heard some concerns. Do you have any response?
Yes, Mr. Bjornson, as you indicated at your last meeting, we failed to follow up with you and the CAC on your concerns. I'm going to ask Ms. Corral-Lopez, who's sitting right behind you, and is one of the top people in the operations department, to follow up with you and make sure that she reports to me on the resolution of each of the CAC's concerns.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Taylor.
Thank you very much for your continued hard work. Mr. Fasana, and then I do have Worth Baker afterwards.
I would like to see a report back on these items back to the Operations Committee, to the concerns addressed and the staff response. If we could have that agendized at the next meeting, I would like to see that.
Okay. I think fair enough.
Okay. Thank you.
Can we make it by the next meeting to the extent?
We'll give a report at the next meeting on where we are.
Thank you.
Thank you. Worth Baker.
The handout's not very clear on the internet, just the report. It's very fuzzy.
Sorry? The report on this item or on all? Is that us or you? Okay, so it's us. All right, we'll try and reports. Thank you very much. Let's see. Where are we? 60 is withdrawn. Let's go to 59. Lamps.
Mr. Chairman and Director Fasana, the Commander Jordan, our Chief of Transit Police, is out of the state today. This report will be given by Captain Holly Perez, sitting in for him.
Standing in. Thank you.
Is the item withdrawn, or is it
No.
59.
59 okay. Is going to be off agenda.
Yeah.
So.
Or no, 60 was 60. Was withdrawn. Okay.
Good afternoon.
I'm sorry. Just for the record, okay. I'm sorry. 59 is on the agenda. This is our report. 60 is off.
Yes.
Just so we're clear.
I misread the agenda the way it's above or below the line.
Thank you. As you can see for this this slide, the Part 1 crimes, which are the major crimes, are down 2.4% for year-to-date in comparison with last year, although the numbers are very similar to last year, 79 to 80. However, our arrests are up 26.5%, which I attribute to the increase in the contract, the number of bodies, deputies, and security assistants that we have out on patrol along the lines. As you can see, the citations are also up 7.8%. And we were discussing why in both years the February numbers spiked like they did. And we can't figure that out. We're going to take a look at that and see what the causes were. And we began the Metro Court last month. And the Metro citations, they're writing an average of about 500 a day. And the calls for service are also up, and we believe that's attributed to the if you see something, say something posters that are all over the place, plus the increase in deputy presence on the lines. A lot of those increase in calls are observations where the citizens will flag down a deputy at the location or nearby a location. So we're up 9.2% on that. Then our response times, which is the 10, 20, 30, are our parameters for that. We're still under, averaging 7.2 on our emergent, 16.6 on our priority, and 29.9 on our routine. We also started the pre-revenue for the expo line, which was what I was talking about with the increase in the contract. We put 5 motors out there on the expo line at the end of last year, with them enforcing the traffic laws and the pedestrian crossing against the red lights and things like that. With the expo train, prior to the expo train starting to run. Then pre-revenue started the 23rd of January with the trains running more frequently. On the 5th, we actually got the items that are going to be assigned to the expo, and they began active enforcement along the lines. So you can see that at the end of March, we had 1,951 citations issued for both pedestrians and vehicles. That's basically pedestrians crossing under the guard gates and cars running the red lights, turning left in front of the trains, or as in the case with the USC students a few weeks back, racing the train and then turning in front of it. So the ILP matrix began at the beginning of this month, and that is looking at where our problem areas are and redeploying our resources to those areas. And then, as we said earlier in this session, the expo line is set to open on the 28th, which we're very excited about, and we'll have the full service and contingency of deputies out there for that. And that concludes our presentation. Any questions?
Questions, Mr. Fasana?
None today, thank you.
It's you and me up here now. I have cards from Worth Baker and John Walsh.
I just want to say, arrests being up or down, well, arrests being up is not necessarily a good thing. I'm all for prevention. No crime's better than arrests. And I think more visibility is always a good thing. It's always, I guess anecdotally, it always seems to me there's a lot more deputies during the day when we don't really need them. And at night, I hardly ever see them when I would like to see them in the system. I think during the day, there's enough reasonable people around that people feel relatively safe. As far as people calling and getting the sheriff department out in the subway system, it'd be a lot easier to do if there was Wi-Fi or a cell phone service. It would be really nice if we'd be able to take a picture and just email it to emergency dispatch with a geotag, which is very easy to do with today's technology. Yeah, that's it.
Thank you. John Walsh?
John Walsh, blogging at HollywoodHighlands.org. I live two blocks from the Hollywood Vine Station. The sheriffs are doing an excellent job compared to the LAPD in the area. We have a crime wave in Hollywood. Three women have been raped near the Hollywood Highlands Station, but most of them after you left, one or two in the morning. After they leave, the sheriffs leave when the system falls goes down. And, of course, arrests up is always a good sign. I feel safe on MTA because of the sheriffs, especially when we got rid of the lame ass LAPD when they were running things and brought in the sheriffs. Things are very, very calm on the red line. However, you're right. Those USC students racing the train, which they kept that story out of, and I mean, psychotic UCLA students, USC students racing, allegedly, they were arrested for it. You sound like a criminal attorney. Oh, one second. You are a criminal attorney.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. Very good. So that's a receive and file with no objection. Thank you for your report. The next in sequence is item 66. However, Director Huizar has asked me to continue this until next committee's meeting where he can be present to make comments on that. Are there any public speaker cards for item 66? Is that Mr. Baker? Would you waive and bring this, come back next month and we'll address your concerns then. 67.
Good afternoon. Diane Corral-Lopez, Deputy Executive Officer for Operations. This is a receive and file in response to a board motion, item 31 in February of 2012. Staff was directed to review and evaluate security, facilities maintenance practices, and parking utilization. In the first element regarding security, staff will be evaluating security systems throughout our service area. We will be working with the Sheriff's Department over the next 4 months to complete the analysis and bring the recommendations back to the board at that time. In the second element, staff was asked to identify best practices in facilities maintenance, and most recently we have prioritized activities to focus on cleanliness at rail stations and the additional park and ride lots. We will continue to evaluate our procedures and practices in this. And the last element is the parking utilization study. Countywide planning has completed a preliminary draft of that study, and they are planning to bring that back to the board in June. That completes my comments. If you have any questions, staff is available.
Thank you. I have a note from my staff which indicates there's a request for some new FTEs, 17 FTEs on this, and some capital budget.
Okay, so the 17 FTEs are in the event when we take over the park and ride lots, the 41 park and ride lots. And at that time, we'll come back.
Okay.
So this is a receive and file. We're not asking for FTEs right now.
Okay. All right. We're not ready to give them to you right now anyway. Even if you were to ask. There's only two of us. We couldn't give it to you if you asked.
Yeah. I've gotten that message.
Any comments, Mr. Fasano,
nope.
On this item? I do have two speakers, Worth Baker and John Walsh.
Just on the parking, this reminds me. So here at Union Station, it's great. You can park like, was it $6 a day? If you read the signs carefully for the parking rates, they're actually contradictory, and it's a class action lawsuit waiting to happen. I'm not sure that Metro itself actually operates the garages, but But if you read the signs, there's two signs downstairs with different rates, and all I have to do is just park here and, you know, be mischarged off of one sign, file a class action lawsuit, and we can go back and review all the mischarges over the last years and years and years, something that really should be addressed to the parking company. It's a class action waiting to happen.
Thank you. Mr. Jump to Conclusions about USC Students, Walsh, you're up.
Yeah. John Walsh, blogging at HollywoodHighlands.org. I feel sorry for the sheriffs to have to cope with the nightmare of these parking lots. We know that at least 50% of the people parking there are not using MTA buses or trains. Go to the aviation station and you can stand, you're high, and you look down, and early in the morning you see people, commuters, driving, parking, and then going to work, not taking it, not taking the green line. It's the last stop. And then you see them coming from work, airport jobs, getting into their cars and leaving. It's even worse at North Hollywood. Now, I'm not asking the sheriffs to follow somebody to see whether they actually take the subway or and then write them a ticket, because that would be a waste of their valuable time. Now, back in New York, they have something called theft of service. In other words, it's a misdemeanor back there in New York. So, but I'm telling you right now, criminal incubation is the parking lots. You're waiting for someone to get killed there.
Okay. Mr. Walsh, I'm going to assign you to create a method where we can patrol that with the least number of employees and the least cost to determine the legality, the appropriateness of people parking, and because it's a problem. Not only, I understand they may actually be entitled to park there despite not using the system, but how do we patrol that and, as you said, without having to follow them and see where they actually go? It's a problem that I'm not sure we can solve.
My consulting fee is $500 an hour.
I'll buy you a cup of coffee. Mr. Fasana.
Yeah, I'll throw in a second cup. But the do we have authority through our code of conduct, transit courts, to be able to address this particular issue? I mean, I presume there is some type of law somewhere. Is this something that's enforceable through our transit courts?
Mr. Chairman, this is our property, and we can control who parks on our property. So, yes, we do have authority. What's more likely necessary in these cases is that we would control the parking. And Ms. Corral-Lopez mentioned we'll be coming back in a few months with some recommendations on the parking lots. And one of the things we're considering is controlling and charging for the parking, and that approach most likely would cut down seriously on the abuse of the parking.
I'll say I think it makes sense, given our scarce resources, to be building parking lots that we don't charge for while we charge our patrons. Has not always seemed real intuitive. So I think the charge can be modest and reasonable, and if it ensures that the lots are being used for what they're intended for, or even if it links in with our passes or TAP, if we ever get that fixed, that'd be a good thing.
Okay, thank you. That's a receive and file, and we appreciate the report. Item 68.
John Roberts, Executive Director of Transportation. This is a receive and file report on the incident with our overhead catenary system on February 23rd. At 4 o'clock in the morning, we had a failure of an insulator that, as a result, we lost 2,000 feet of wire. Unfortunately, this happened at the exit of our Blue Line storage facility. On that particular morning, we only had two cars or two trains that were able to get out. It was approximately 110 minutes later before we were able to get an additional 10 trains out. So, therefore, our system was impacted significantly throughout the course of the day. We were able to make public service announcements. We had staff at all the stations. LA Sheriff's Department did an excellent job supporting our efforts to work with our crowds and control. Since that time, we've assessed the failure of a device called an insulator was the primary cause. We've had our facilities folks or traction power folks do an assessment, and we're in the process of replacing, I think there's about 500 of these systems or these devices in the system. So that is in the process right now. This overhaul of the overhead catenary system had been scheduled to be done and currently is in a procurement process. So the efforts are to do all the preventive efforts again for this to happen in the future. In the last 20 years, we've probably had three of these devices fail, but they weren't at such a critical, crucial location. So that concludes our report. Is there any questions that we can answer?
Just so I understand it, the insulator supports the wire.
Correct.
And due to its fracture or its breaking, the wire fell to the ground.
That's
blocking,
correct.
Blocking the...
Causing no power to be available to the track.
Okay. And then how did we repair that? I mean, I understand its failure, but it took how many hours to get it back?
I can have Michael Harris Gifford, executive officer, respond.
Yes, sir. In fact, I have the offending insulator here if anyone of the board members want to take a look at it. In order to complete the repairs, what we had to do was to electrically isolate that section of the wire, and then we basically used mechanical pulleys to lift the wire again and replace. We actually replaced not only that insulator in the area, but all the other insulators in that section as an added precaution. Once we'd replaced all of those insulators, we tightened the wire back up, had test drains pass through it, and at that point we released the track back into full revenue service. Just to follow on from what John said, just to kind of give you a little bit more information on what we're currently doing. Last year, under a statewide program, we'd fitted safety straps over about 60% of those insulators. We had planned this year to move on to the green line. Instead, what we have done is to refocus our work to complete the safety straps on the remaining 40% of this type of insulator on the blue line. Currently, we're halfway between Vernon and Slauson on that completion of those safety straps continuing to move southward. By the time we finished fitting the remainder of those safety straps, basically the safety strap is that if an insulator were to break, the wire won't fall down. Once we've completed that safety strap program, we should have received delivery of those replacement insulators. The replacement insulators are a higher grade than was originally installed, and we will be doing a complete line replacement. It's about 500 units within the main line and another 400 or so within the yard. Once we've completed that, then we will move on to the green line. Once we've completed the green line, there's a little bit we need to button up on the gold line. So once we've done the green line, we'll move on to the gold line.
Okay. I'm glad we have a systematic approach to it, and hopefully we don't have another failure. If we do, the safety strap will prevent
we will still have to do repairs, but it will stop the failure to be as catastrophic to continued rail operations as occurred in the February incident.
Okay. Thank you. I have a speaker, Worth Baker.
These types of things will always happen in different, things will always break down eventually. My concern is that I don't feel that people are prepared for these unplanned contingencies. I mean, there's many solutions. I mean, my understanding was that you weren't able to get cars out onto the tracks to use because of the downage. I mean, if you need to have 1,000 battery packs ready to go and put them up on top of the train and hook them into the train, and that's what it takes to get the train out on there, if you have to push them manually, if you have to have a special device that you can put on the track that will pull the train at 1 mile an hour, you need to have this. Things are going to happen, and you need to be prepared for it. I've seen a lot of issues like the red lines. whenever these things happen, I'm just aghast at how they're handled. The amount of time, it's millions of dollars an hour for the public when they can't get the work. Even though it doesn't come off of your budget, it comes off of society's budget. I'd love to help you guys help plan for these contingencies. I'm very good at it.
Thank you. Mr. Rosana, did you have any comments
No.
on this item? Okay, this is a report, receive, and file. Thank you for explaining to us what happened.
Thank you.
Item 69. No report by the CEO. General public comments. Oh, there was a report on...
There was no 69.
There was no 69, so you're invited to address us during public comment. Worth Baker, followed by John Walsh.
Is there a way to submit these comment cards online? Are we in 2012, or if someone doesn't want to address an issue that's like the last issue, why they need to be here before the whole thing starts to submit? I mean, just enforcing the new no request forms before, you know, if the meeting's already been called to order, the meeting goes for 2 hours and all you care about is the last issue. It's just asinine. It is asinine. It's just asinine. Either let people submit them during, you know, throughout the day. Maybe I don't want to comment on something until I realize that someone says something ridiculous I need to comment on at that point. I shouldn't have to come way early in the day to submit all these. I should be able to do it off my phone as it goes. You guys should have an electronic list. I can help you with this technology. It's very simple.
You can submit comments which will be forwarded to the entire board, not just the committee that you would like to address, via the board secretary's office. So
what he's saying is
Jackson will submit that.
Under the Brown Act in the 21st century, can I submit a request to speak on an agenda item online? Well, you can do it. You don't even have television here. You use reel-to-reel to tape the meetings. This is the 1950s when it's to your advantage. I'd like to point out yesterday was a terrible day for the mayor. He unveiled Prop F, you know, the F and Fools prop, which incidentally does not indefinitely extend Prop R. It perpetually extends Prop R. You made an agreement. You said you could do it in 30 years, and now you want forever to do it. And I think it was terrible of Mr. Dick Clark to selfishly die on the day that the mayor was doing his State of the City address, robbing him of all the TV coverage. Way to go, Dick.
Thank you. I have no other...
Mr. Clark, when I said Dick.
I have no other comments and no further business. The committee is adjourned.
That was fair.